Welcome to another edition of the Did You Know Show with your host, Fred Hosse. I'm Ray.
And I'm Holly.
And welcome, Fred. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good.
Good. This week's topic is the adaptation of plants to desert life. And you can check out the show notes at dykshow.blogspot.com. And you can email Fred at fredhosse@gmail.com. Fred is spelled F-R-E-D, and Hosse is H-A-A-S-E.
And if you're a Twitter user, you can follow me at twitter.com/psharkr.
Okay.
Sorry, I had to throw it in there. I've thrown it in every other show. Don't worry about that. Anyway, all right, so Fred, where do you want to start off?
Well, I'm going to be starting off with first mention about the fact that most people think of desert plants storing water to resist drought, but they actually have many different methods of doing it. In fact, the water storage is actually done by a minority of desert plants.
So they don't store water. So is
they
there,
do store some of them.
Some
do.
Of them do. Okay, but not all of them. There's some that don't store any, and they have other methods.
They have other methods of surviving droughts.
Okay,
including that's right.
This should be very interesting. So which kind do you want to start with?
Well, I'm going to first of all start out talking about those plants that avoid droughts or avoid the desert altogether.
How do they do that?
All right. Well, the way they do that.
They go underground or something?
No.
Seal up?
What they do is they produce seeds.
Oh, okay.
And the seeds lay on the ground. They can survive like that for even decades.
Wow.
There are some desert plants that grow in such severe deserts as the Atacama Desert, northern Chile, which it might rain about once every 30 years.
So they wait till it rains and then they start growing?
That's correct.
Wow. So it's not just seasonal. It's like you could have something that you wouldn't see for 30 years?
That's correct.
Wow. I did not
and
know
our
that.
And our own Death Valley is a good example, too. It's a severe desert. It averages around 2 inches a year in our Death Valley. But yet, remember about 2 or 3 years ago, they had a winter rain, and suddenly it was full of flowers the following spring.
Wow.
And then they didn't last long. They dried up and withered away, and they look like they're gone. But it goes even more amazing than that, is that whenever conditions become favorable for the seeds to start germinating and growing, only a small fraction of the total number of seeds will actually germinate.
Okay.
And that's an adaptation because of the possibility that the rain might have been enough to germinate the seeds, but the ground will dry out too quickly to allow the plant to grow and produce a fresh batch of seeds. So this fractional germination is a guard against an unexpected dry period immediately following the rain.
Okay, so just some of them grow and the other ones don't, just in case the rain's faking them out.
That's correct.
Okay.
And actually, a lot of our annual wildflowers use the same technique, but in this case, they're avoiding unexpected late freeze that may kill the seedlings.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the remaining seeds will germinate later. So okay. The catches or the desert plants that use this trick are much better at it.
Okay.
And so they are, yes?
That's one method. Are there other ones then as well? Or are you not finished with that one? Sorry.
I'm not completely through with it. One thing they do, these plants have to do, is have the ability to grow very fast.
They have the water.
While they have water.
Yep.
And then they flower, and produce seeds, and then die, all within about 2 or 3 weeks.
Wow. So it could be once every 30 years for 2 or 3 weeks.
That's correct.
But
yet the amount of seeds that they have produced in the desert is so abundant that they produce a large population of a class of ants we call harvesting ants. These are ants that live on plant seeds. And they support a fairly large population in deserts, as you can see, that the drought can last a very long time, like even more than a decade. but yet the seeds are so abundant they can keep the ants happy. But yet when the rain comes, there's still plenty of seeds left over to start the next generation.
Wow. All right. So that's one method down. What are the other ones? Are there other ones that do not involve storing water?
We actually we'll have two of the other methods that do store water, but one of them, the storage of water, is merely incidental to the truth. But now my next plant I'm going to be mentioning is the as exemplified by the creosote bush. These are plants that have enormous root systems compared to the size of the plant, and they're very good at literally sucking moisture right out of the soil by osmosis.
Okay.
And they are very long-lived plants, like the creosote bush. There have been some estimates that we got creosote clones in parts of the Mojave Desert that are 10,000 years old.
Oh, wow.
Which makes
how
the longest...
How big are they? You said, like, how big is the bush compared to the root system? Like, what kind of scale are we talking here?
Well, we're talking about a bush that's about 3 feet tall and about 3 feet wide.
Yeah,
you know,
so
that's a pretty typical size of a creosote bush.
Okay.
Or a little bit less than that. But yet it'll produce a root that reaches out about 10 feet, both downward and horizontally.
Okay. So the roots of typically of a much bigger plant.
That's correct.
Okay.
And as they get older, the plants don't really get bigger. What happens is that the new plants sprout on the trunk of the old plant, becoming new plants, and the original plant dies, so that then the creosote bush starts form into a ring of spreading bushes with nothing in the middle. And so, in fact, as they computed how fast the ring expands, and that's how they are able to get how old they are. 10,000 years ago was the last ice age. So that means that in the Mojave or desert southwest, conditions were not favorable for the creosote bush 10,000 years ago.
Wow.
So when they got favorable, certain individual plants started growing, and they've been growing ever since.
That's crazy. I had no idea.
And there are other examples of similar sets of plants, like the tar bush and the greasewood. And, of course, the greasewood is also a common name of the creosote bush. And but these are just other examples of the plants that use a very efficient root system to stay alive in a desert. But these plants do not grow in the extreme deserts that those ephemeral survivors I described first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this was.
But now they're not.
I mean, in terms of storage of water. They're it's because of their root system and the osmosis that they're just able to constantly pull water out of the soil.
That's correct, but
so
they
does it store it up then for if the soil gets really dry, or is it just a matter of it's so good that it doesn't matter how dry the soil is, it'll be all right.
It's mostly that.
Mostly
but
that.
Also,
okay.
they can also survive a greater degree of dehydration. That a creosote bush or tar bush can, the amount of water in a leaf, for example, may drop down to 30%. All other plants would be dead with that little water, but they can keep on going. So are very efficient at absorbing water, but they can survive on very little of it. And these are all. Well, let's see, sagebrush in the Great Basin is another example of that type.
Okay, so that was our second type. There's a third type that has a little bit of something to do with storing water?
Nope.
Oh, no, okay, that was the last one.
The third type is a type that's common with some of the grasses, in which the above ground... The plant will actually die down to a fraction of an inch, so that you'll see the green part only a fraction of an inch above a soil. And so it survives on that during droughts. And when the rain comes, the whole clump of grass will suddenly sprout and grow, produce seeds, and then when the drought resumes, it'll die back down to soil line, but they don't really store anything. It's just whatever happens, food that is left in its stem from the previous growth is its source of survival.
Okay.
And at the in the same connection, this moves us also to another method of surviving, is that is a type of photosynthesis called C4. Grasses do that too. And so do a lot of other plants.
What is
like
that?
The tumbleweed. Now, C4, most plants that carry on photosynthesis, and the regular photosynthesis is called C3 because three carbon atoms is used in the process.
Oh.
In the C4, oleic acid is produced, and what happens, oleic acid concentrates around the chlorophyll, and as it picks up carbon dioxide, it locks the carbon dioxide in with producing oleic acid. And this is why it's called the C4, because it has an extra carbon atom involved in the photosynthesis. Then with a great heat, the carbon dioxide is released and is concentrated around each chlorophyll atom and increases the photosynthetic efficiency. And so the C4 plants can produce more sugars than your ordinary plants because of that, so they can get more growing done when conditions are good. Also, the C4 can keep the stomata of the leaves partially closed during drought because they can more efficiently extract the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
Okay.
And an example of some C4 plants that I mentioned, corn is a C4 plant. In fact, most grasses are. And like I already mentioned, the tumbleweed, and if you are familiar with salosa, a garden flower, that's another C4 plant. And these show up quite a bit in deserts.
Okay. And you said they sprout up when the rain happens, and then when the rain goes away, they go back to soil level and they hang on to a little bit of the water, and that sustains until the next time it rains.
That's the grasses, but not all C4 use that plants and that method. Like tumbleweeds are annuals. They'll grow maybe to 6 feet tall in a desert during the summer,
mm-hmm.
and they can get that efficient growth because they use a C4 method.
Okay, so there's lots of other plants too that use it.
Right.
All right, so that was the third type. Was there a fourth type? I can't remember.
Now we got two versions of the what you could call the storage type.
Okay, two versions of storage type. Okay, so we've done the ones that don't store water. Now we're going to do a couple that do.
All right.
Okay.
Now the first one is a pure one. These would you call the patchicol plants. And what that means, they're fat plants. Strange, some examples would be like the Bassarias or the Pachypodiums in Africa, Adeniums in Africa, and like the elephant's foot plant in Mexico. And what they have is that the much of the plant looks kind of normal, but they have big fat bases that are used to store both food and water in. And this big tuber is often underground, but sometimes they stick above the ground. Indeed, have you ever heard of the baobab tree?
Nope.
It's an African tree that grows and reaches a diameter greater than that of the sequoia.
Oh, wow.
And it grows in deserts, and it's the extreme form of the patchicol plant.
Now, are these the place where it stores the food and the water? Is this like some sort of a hard shell to it to keep animals and stuff out? I mean, how do they defend against, you know, if there's all this water in there, how do they keep, you know,
animals
from getting it?
Well, there's several ways, but some of them do it with spines, like the Pachypodiums.
Okay.
Some of them are very poisonous, like the Adeniums.
Oh, that'll do it.
Are any of them bitter tasting? Huh? Are any of them bitter tasting?
They all are bitter tasting, so you don't need to worry about accidentally eating one.
Okay. All right. So that takes care of that. All right.
And So the even though the baobab becomes the largest in diameter, it is such a squatty tree that the plant volume is far less than that of a sequoia. Yeah. So the sequoia still is the largest tree in the world.
Yes. Yep.
All right. Okay. And now the last one is what is called CAM, photosynthesis, or Cresselian acid metabolism.
Okay.
And they super. When you first see one, you would think that they're the kind of the ultimate of the storage plants, but storage really is only part of it. The most important part of it is the acid metabolism, which enables them to hold their breath during the daytime while doing photosynthesis. I will specify. And the plants. CAM plants include things like cactus, century plants, yuccas, orchids, bromeliads, and puyas, and you get the idea. In other words, they appear to be juicy succulent plants.
Okay.
Not all of them desert plants. Like orchids grow up on tree branches, but since when you're on a tree branch, you don't know when the next rain goes, you better have a way of hanging on to the water.
Okay.
So, way it works is that late in the day, when the most of the oleic acid is used up, it causes the pressures to drop in the stomatas, or the guard cells of the stomatas, which causes the stomatas to open up.
Okay, late in the day. Why does it happen late in the day?
Well, it'll be obvious as soon as I talk about it.
Okay.
And then as the sun goes down, it continues to breathe and the air circulates through the tissue of the plant.
Okay.
The oleic acid combines with the carbon dioxide. The oleic acid combines with the carbon dioxide. Of course, that produces the oleic acid. And the pH of the plant sap goes down. And what that then does is cause the guard cells to swell up and they shut. So then the plant stops breathing.
Okay.
Then the sun comes up, heats up the plant a little bit. That causes the oleic acid to decompose. And as it does so, it releases the carbon dioxide, and now the plant can do photosynthesis without losing water.
So basically just shuts down for the night.
Shuts down for the day.
Or shuts down for the day?
Yeah, I'm talking about, it closes the stomata during the day.
Okay.
It opens it during the night, and you would think that's when they need to have the stomata open to let the carbon dioxide drift through the plant. But in fact, it does do that. It opens up at night to let the carbon dioxide drift through the plants and latches onto it. Then as the when the pH drops, it causes the stomatas to close up, in which case then the plant ceases to breathe. The air can't flow through the plant.
Okay.
The sun comes up and the stomata still are closed. But the heating of the sun causes the oleic acid to release the CO2. And so the plant then starts doing photosynthesis without allowing any air to flow through it.
Okay.
And that way, during the heat of the day, it doesn't lose water vapor to the air.
Okay, so, all right. So it keeps the water shut off during the day, because when the temperature is really high, that water is going to more readily evaporate. It's going to be net evaporation, more so than at night.
That's correct.
Okay, and then during the night, it does the thing where it allows the air to go through so that it can repeat the next day, but it does it at nighttime because, therefore, there will be less loss of water over the course of the night to the air.
Correct, because air gets cool.
I was confused initially, but I got it now.
Yeah, when the air gets cool, obviously the relative humidity gets very much higher.
Yeah.
And so the plant then can breathe without losing much water vapor.
Yeah, makes sense.
And it holds it. And then when it gets hot, it's not breathing. and hangs on to the water, but still can carry on photosynthesis.
Okay.
And actually, the succulents of cacti, of orchids, of century plants, and aloes, and other plants like that, is not so much to store water per se, but it is actually a water-conserving device by using the CAM method of photosynthesis.
Okay. All right. Was that the second method that has a little bit to do with storing water, or is it in that category?
That's it. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That was okay. What I was talking about. That storing water.
That's not really a storage. I would think that that's more, like you said, it's more a way of conserve what it's got. It's not really storing it up. It's just doing something that makes sense so that it doesn't lose more than it has to.
Right. Whereas the true storage are petrichor plants, which may, in fact, as a whole storage organ, is often underground.
Yeah. Okay. Well, does that wrap up our different types of plants?
It sure does. Different ways of adapting to drought.
I did not know any of that, Fred. My knowledge on plants is extremely limited. But the next time I'm in the desert, I am going to look around.
Think about this.
Yes, I can almost guarantee it. It'll pop into my head because I'll see probably one of those above ground. What did you call them again? The above ground storage.
The petrichor.
Yes,
the the petrichor are not very common in Texas. They do exist, but they're not common.
Where would you see those? Would they be in the Mojave?
No, not there either.
Not there
you
either?
See them in the Sonoran Desert, mostly in Mexico, or the Chihuahuan Desert in Mexico.
Oh, I won't be there anytime soon. So.
And also, you can say just about all of the African deserts and semi-deserts.
Okay, and I won't see those, but maybe some of this other stuff.
Yeah, now you will.
Certainly, I'll see tumbleweed and cactus and grasses and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, or the creosote bush.
Yes, the creosote bush. Yep, but I guess I won't be seeing those other ones. Oh well, I'll look it up online. I'll look it up at the Wikipedia. I think we should find a picture of one of those ones from Africa. You said the ones that are as wide as a sequoia.
Yes.
And you said those are in Africa. We'll try to find a picture of that and put it in the show notes.
All right, they're called baobab tree, and there's one large species that grows in most of the drier parts of Africa, and there's five species of them grow in western Madagascar, and one species that grows in Australia.
All right, so we shouldn't have any problems finding pictures then, I don't think.
No, right. I know you won't, because all you need to do is Google up baobab.
All right, we will do. We'll put that in the show notes so people can check out the picture of this thing that's wider than the sequoia, which has got me curious. All right,
I was going to say the very biggest of the baobabs is hollow, and it's been converted to a beer joint.
Where's that at?
South Africa.
South Africa. All right. I don't know if we'll find a picture of that, but we'll try to find a picture of that too. That's funny. All right. Well, that wraps up our show on plants and
the adaptation to desert life.
Yes. You can reach Fred
at fredhaase@gmail.com. Haase is spelled Haase. And also check out the show notes, and we'll put up some pictures of some of these plants. And anything else Fred would like to go in the show notes at dykshow.blogspot.com.
And if you have questions for future shows, suggestions, please feel free to email at that address.
Next time, we're going to be talking about sunspots.
Sunspots and their effect on global climate. So Matt, we'll be discussing a little bit about the mini ice age of the 1600s and what's going on right now. So that'll be our next topic. I'm Ray.
And I'm Holly.
And this was the Did You Know Show with your host, Fred Haase. Until next time, so long, Fred.
All right, goodbye.